Welcome to Manager Tools. Feedback dialogue is stupid guidance. Part 3. This cast answers these questions. Should I have a dialogue with my directs when giving feedback? Does having a dialogue help performance? Does having a dialogue improve my ability to give feedback? So if you want answers to these questions and more, keep listening. Here we go.
Folks, we've got exciting news regarding client events. Client events for effective manager training can now be 3 sessions. That's the standard. We've talked to a lot of clients, and scheduling 4 sessions is harder, obviously. And so we figured out how to do one-on-ones, feedback, and delegation, and rolling out the Trinity in 3 sessions. Agendas make that hard to do it, to make sure that the session is not too long, but it covers the key points and it flows well. And if you want a 4th session, if you also want coaching covered, we can do that. Typically, that's not been part of our client offering because of the amount of time it takes during the day. But for virtual, if you're able to schedule a 4th session, we're able to deliver a 4th session as well. So give us a call or reach out to Maggie or Kate or me at manager-tools.com, and we'll be happy to help.
All right, Mark. So we're on part 3. This has been,
yes.
I figured it'd be a long one once I read the show notes, because I don't know, they're like 30 pages long or something.
So yeah.
A lot to get through.
You know, what's funny about it is I fear now, having recorded a little bit of it, that the title Feedback Dialogue is Stupid Guidance. You know, I try not to make our guidance about a defense of us or an attack on the zeitgeist, this whole idea of dialogue. The problem is, we didn't do it for years and years and years. The problem is, the reason I did this one now, A, because we're about to roll out the feedback data cast, but B, because I get these questions so many times. Well, I'm reading that we should have a dialogue. So I've probably read 200 articles about people who are saying you should have a dialogue, and you start getting into this stuff. These are people who don't have research in the field with managers. These are people that haven't tested different phrases. These are people who over and over and over again talk about making the direct feel good. And there's a waiting on the side. I talk about this all the time with people when I'm waxing more significantly about management in general and theory, about the difference between the organization's needs and the individual's wants. The overlap of that Venn diagram is really important. And there is a growing sense that individual wants should be primary. And I disagree with that, because the moment you freely associate or join an organization, the organization's needs matter. Now, I'm not suggesting you should do a job you hate, but the vast majority of jobs in the world, and the people who are listening to this, are not doing jobs that they hate. They may like this job more than that job. And the job they like the least, they say, I hated that job. But, you know, they did it for 3 years, so they must not have hated it.
Hate's a pretty
strong word. And, you know, I believe that a great deal of this guidance about feedback dialogue is about addressing the needs of the individual to feel good. Now, don't get me wrong, guys. I want everybody to feel good. You know, happy is good. That's not what the organization wants.
Right.
The organization wants people to be productive. Now, the people in the organization want you to be both productive and happy.
Maybe folks who would agree with my statement, which is maybe they're thinking about two things, they're conflating two things together in talking about it in the context of feedback, which is, I'm going to give them some grace and say they want to have a relationship and have their people feel productive and happy, right? And they also want to give performance feedback. And they're trying to do both of those things at the same time when giving feedback. And maybe feedback, I think you'd agree, is not the time to focus on that. The time to focus on that is, and folks, we do, the most important thing you can do with your folks is have a great relationship, which is one-on-one.
Take it from two guys who are not naturally good at great relationships.
Ask my wife. So that's when we would do it. We just don't believe that feedback is the time to do that, right? So we have two different tools, and trying to do them both at the same time is a recipe for disaster, because what it does is it makes you ineffective at achieving both of those objectives. One, they're not getting effective performance feedback, and two, the relationship is not growing.
So. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so The whole idea of this, I was a little uncomfortable, but as I warmed to the topic, as we've been talking, the reason we went long is because it just keeps occurring to me. You know, I believe we have an obligation to set our guidance in the context of where people are. And the context in modern organizational and management and professional and career guidance now, compared to 30 years ago when you and I had a few years under a belt in our careers, is very much more focused on individuals, very much more focused on what the individual wants. And I will tell you, there's a great quote from a book called 1L. It's one of the greatest, it's a nonfiction book written by Michael Lewis. No, I'm sorry, that's wrong. I think it's Scott Turow. Not Michael Lewis of Blindside fame, but the famous lawyer,
Grisham?
The guy who wrote The Firm.
John Grisham?
No, did Grisham write The Firm?
I thought he did. Well,
maybe you're right. It might be Scott Turow. It might be John Grisham. He wrote a book called 1L. And the book is his story of the first year at Harvard Law. And Harvard Law is famous for being a very good law school, obviously. And there was a guy who taught them called Perini. And he was a really, really tough professor. But he was also fair and reasonable. He wasn't a jerk. He wasn't rude to people. He just had very high standards. And there's a line in the book. I could still show you on the page in the version that I read, hardback or softback or whatever. This is before Kindle. There's a line in the book that I think Perini retired or something or went to another job or something. And they said, "We loved the bastard." Now, to me, what they were saying was, they really did love him, and he was hard on him. Now, I don't think our goal should be to be hard on our directs, but I think if you come to the approach, the relationship between manager and direct, saying, "I'm going to put their needs, their wants first," I think you're doomed as a manager, or you might be great as an individual manager, as a frontline manager, but you'll never make it as an executive, because every level you go up in the organization, you become more responsible for a larger slice of that organization. When you become CEO, you have sleepless nights realizing you're responsible for everything. Of course, you can't do everything, but there's a whole discussion there about people saying, "Well, I'm not responsible for that. I don't do it." I'm like, dude, you're completely missing the point about responsibility. So if you want to focus on what your people want, you're going to end up in a situation where you're always defending the organization against the individual. And different hiring will help you with that. So I think this is really a common tug of war that most people don't think about, but it's my systemic evaluation of what is happening in a common tug of war between the individual's wants and the organization's needs and the important role the manager plays in adjudicating that battle, if you will. Sorry, that's a little too highbrow probably.
No,
that even sounded highbrow in my mind, and I don't think of myself as highbrow.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. Okay. Cool. So we've really covered two of our 6 points. Yeah. We've about conversations being misguided. And so folks, if it should be clear by now, there's two other parts to this. If you haven't listened to those, you should listen to those first before doing this. And discussions are not supported by the data, which many of you will appreciate hearing about, which is like we've tested
data. Yeah. Right? Yeah. The longer you take to give feedback, the less feedback you give in all cases, in every single thing, every single continent in the world, every single level of manager in the world, the longer you take, the less you give. And the more you give, the higher your performance is. Greater feedback leads to greater performance. Now, we're not saying, please, guys, if you haven't listened to the previous two, please understand when Mike and I say feedback, we don't mean negative feedback. We're not pandering to people's emotional fears about, he said feedback, that must mean it's negative. No, we're talking like professionals, like scientists, because we have data on this stuff. Feedback is either positive or negative. The common wisdom today that feedback means negative is wrong. Feedback can be positive.
Absolutely.
And should be more than negative. Okay.
Yes.
Sorry.
Yes. Yeah. Folks, you think with these negative, like command and control, like tell everybody everything they're doing wrong, you'll be wrong. We tell people you should be giving 10 times as much positive feedback as negative feedback. So we say feedback. We don't mean negative feedback. Don't mistake us. Okay, so our next point. A lot of managers, when we describe and teach them the feedback model, they get all wrapped up into having the conversation with their direct because they feel like they need to understand the intent of their direct.
Yeah.
So tell me why that is a bad road to go down.
Yeah. So, I'll probably get this out of order relative to the show notes, which, folks, if you don't know, if you haven't listened a lot, maybe this cast got you interested, and I'm sure you're going to write me a note and say, I wish all your cast could be one part. And I say, oh, sure, I can distill down everything down to a 30-minute discussion. It won't be useful, but I can distill it all down. And this is a long one, and I know I talk too much. But one of the reasons managers want to get to intent, I believe the largest reason, is they believe they can fix the problem with intent, and then the behavior of they didn't get it right. This is because people think in terms of negative feedback. I don't think that way, but most people do. You say feedback, they think negative. And so, oh, if I have to have a conversation about something they made a mistake on, I need to know why they did what they did. Okay. Again, because if I can go upstream enough, right, I can stop the problem. You know, I can, instead of trying to corral the water on the floor, I should turn off the tap. You should know, by the way, that people don't like that at all. But anyway, so managers who we haven't trained on our feedback model tell us all the time that their directs get defensive when they are given negative feedback. They basically describe the reasons why they did what they did. And I'm sure many of you who are listening, if not all, have had that experience. Okay. By the way, if you're an individual contributor and you're listening, tip of the hat to you. Well done. Preparing early. I like that. Reverse engineering the problem. Good. And here's a lesson for you. When your manager gives you negative feedback, when she says, hey, can I give some feedback? Or, hey, I didn't like the way you did that. Can you try that differently? Just say thank you. And yes, I'll do better. Don't give them your reasons. Giving your reasons makes you sound, pardon the expression, weak. It makes you sound like you need to defend yourself. You don't. You don't. You made a mistake. The mistake is in the past. Okay? Now, if the boss is chewing you out, okay, maybe. But then our suggestion is get a different boss. Mm-hmm. And that means a job search. And I know what that means. I'm not trying to diminish that there's a lot of work there. But working for a bad boss is a hard road. Now, here's the problem. You get your directs and they give you their why they did what they did, okay? Since that happens, because it's supposed to happen in most feedback dialogue guidance, it's worth getting into that in more detail, okay? That's the point, in part, not the only point, but in part of feedback dialogue. Let's get to what the direct was thinking and feeling and wanting and needing and so on. Now, let's start with this. The manager describes a situation and he or she says the direct got defensive. That is a big clue to me when I get asked this question. Unless I know the person and I know they use our models and they know what feedback is, and feedback, professional feedback, is always about behavior. It's not about intent, right? And in this situation, they have probably, not always, but probably failed to separate what they told the direct, and they got into intent or motivation or emotions or reasoning or whatever, thinking, and they didn't talk specifically about behavior. And what happens then is there's a much greater likelihood that the feedback itself wasn't exclusively behavioral. Mm-hmm. In other words, Mike works for me, and we're in a meeting, and Mike interrupts a colleague, and says, oh, come on, Kate. You can't possibly believe that.
Only an idiot would believe that.
Right? Yes, exactly. That'd you go a step far, further, right? Yeah. Now, remember, that may not work if you know manager tools, org structure, so let's assume Kate and Mike are peers, right? So I could take Mike aside, and I could say, what were you thinking? Which, again, doesn't help the problem.
Oh, my Lord. But you can imagine that there are so many conversations that like this. If that happened, that it would be the start of the conversation.
Yeah.
And in my head, I immediately think of, oh my God, that's going to be a bad conversation.
That's bad. It's just bad. You know, I want to go north, but let's start with south because, you know, that'll help me. But in many cases, a reasonable thing to say is, I saw the way Mike behaved. I want Mike to understand that that's not acceptable. And I say, Mike, that was unprofessional. Now, look, guys, that is a stupid way to give feedback. Okay? That's stupid. You may not realize it yet because you haven't given a lot of feedback, particularly if those of you who are individual contributors. But that's an attack on the person. Okay? You're describing who they are, not what they did. Never forget that phrase. Feedback is about what people did, what people do, not who they are.
Right. And folks, if you reacted negative to that, if your head just snapped back a little bit, like, what? That's an indication that
yeah,
you need to learn about giving more about giving effective feedback.
No, here's what some managers say. Well, Mark, I said that was unprofessional, but it's true. I said, yes, it is true. It was unprofessional. You're missing the point. That's not your job to attack the person because professionalism is part of their being. Again, you're attacking the person and you're not attacking the behavior. You don't throw the baby out with the bathwater, right? There's a difference between the baby, which is innocent and pure and now clean, and the bathwater, which is dirty. That's the whole point of that saying. You don't attack the baby. You don't say you're a bad kid. Not that family and work should be compared. You say what you did was wrong. That thing you did, that behavior was not effective, okay? And if you give feedback about your directs, their motivations, their intents, their beliefs, their values, their emotions, there is almost no model that can help you be effective. Every single time you do it, you will be pinching the relationship. We have a great cast about pinch crunch relationships and the need to periodically reassess the strength of the relationship. If you constantly do that, you'll be destroying the trust you're trying to build at other times, and you will be seen as someone who attacks others for who they are. The next thing you know, you'll be talking about the color of their skin or their gender. Now, look, that is part of who people are. And this is one of the problems I have with a lot of the stuff happening in organizations today around those facts is the organization reveres each person for who they are. But the organization requires, as a necessity of serving the society, that people behave in certain ways that are effective so that we can be profitable and continue to do it. And so behavior is the realm of the organization. I'd even go a step further about giving people feedback about their intent or their motivation. It's not really even feedback. I mean, again, you talk to someone about their thoughts or beliefs or emotions. It's not helpful. It's a personal attack, and it's certainly not professional, okay? But look, even if that manager thinks what he or she is doing is feedback, when we attack a direct, again, talk about who they are, it's an attack. Why would we be surprised that they defend themselves? Look, I'll give you an absurd example, but it's on the continuum here. I hit you. I physically hit you. I strike you. And then you hit back. Obviously, defending yourself, there's a context in which that happens. Maybe we're training in a gym. How funny would it be if I then said, hey, you're getting defensive? And that's what managers are saying. She got defensive. Yeah, you attacked her. It's a normal human response. You said something about who she is, how she feels. That is not going to get you anywhere. It is unsustainable in the long term. If your performance communications, which we call feedback, but you could call them something else, are about anything other than behavior, it's highly likely your directs are going to feel attacked. And if they're attacked, they're going to defend themselves. And then we're going to say, managers are going to say they're being defensive, and we're blaming them for what is, in our opinion at Manager Tools, a completely reasonable response.
Yeah.
It's human nature. You attacked me. I get to defend myself.
Yeah.
Whether you have role power or not.
Yeah, the idea that you're a manager, that you get to hit somebody, either literally or figuratively, and then not get a response, that seems a little bizarre.
Yeah, that's tyranny.
Hey, folks, we're really excited to let you know that we're able to come and do an in-person Effective Manager and Effective Communicator conference on May 11th and 12th in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Every once in a while, an opening occurs in our environment, which allows for us to do in-person training. And in-person training is better. The amount of practice that comes from in-person training, the amount of dedicated focused time answering questions is more valuable. It's better spent. So please, if you're in the area, if you're interested in coming to Minneapolis or can join us there, we'd encourage you to visit our website, manager-tools.com/training, and sign up for our event May 11th and 12th in Minneapolis.
Now, look, that challenge aside, the whole issue of emotions and intents and the issues of motivations versus behavior. And by the way, guys, I'm probably stealing again from the future of these show notes. And I didn't finish my thought, by the way. We have show notes here. And if you're a licensee, you can go online and read this show and you don't have to listen to me bloviate about it. Although lots of our most loyal listeners say, please, Mark, don't cut out the tangents. Don't cut out the stories. So we don't. And I encourage you to consider becoming a licensee if you don't like the sound of my voice. I certainly don't like the sound of my voice. So even separating that issue, the concept of feedback has at its heart learning, the concept of feedback that the discussion model, the dialogue model has, that you're supposed to learn about what your direct was thinking or trying or feeling, is fundamentally part of it, right? In some models, I've read this, managers are encouraged to probe ethically. In my opinion, that very statement indicates that the model maker there knew that probing into people's thoughts, feelings, emotions, reasons, rationales, intent, and so on can cross an unethical line. But you will get no ethical pushback ever. You are on rock solid footing if you talk about someone's behavior, because it is behavior that we get paid for, and behavior which the organization can ask you to change. And if you don't want to do it, that's fine. And the organization say, okay, then you have to go somewhere else, because what the organization wants is behavior.
And of course, in the article, I'm sure they went into a lot of detail about probe ethically.
No. Yeah. This is the best part. It's like that. It's like I told people once, I was at USAA years ago, and they asked me about what we taught in terms of management. I laid out the Trinity, and they said, well, tell us about your coaching model. Here's an example of our coaching model. And actually, I think the reason we got the business was because I said, well, here's our model. And I walked through the four steps, and you do this, and then you do this, and you do this, and you know, so on. I used an example. I said, let's pretend I'm coaching you, Ms. VP, who was leading this meeting. I said, if I were coaching you, I would use the same model if you paid me to hired me to coach you as if you were coaching one of your directs. The model's not that different. And then I said, let me show you. I happened to know I had seen the external resource they were using for coaching. And it was like a 7-step model. And step 4 was coach the direct. So in other words, it's the classic dictionary fallacy that you can define a word with the word itself. And when you got to chapter 4, the heart of it, there was all this setup and know your directs and measure their performance and so on. But at the heart of the model in step 4, there was like one page, and it said, this is the point where you coach your direct. Unfortunately, because there are so many places ways you could coach someone, we can't give you any good examples. This person, they had bought for 10,000 managers a model, a framework that did not define what coaching was. And it's the same thing here. They say you should have an ethical conversation. And you'll almost never see them describe word for word a conversation. They'll suggest ideas. They'll make suggestions, vague recommendations. You know, go to a comfortable place, sit down, and ask the direct, you know, some questions. But they leave it up to managers to figure out how to do that. And I just got to tell you, for people like Mike and I, we're not as sensitive as some other people, good or bad. Try not to repeat that to me, because that would be an attack on me personally. and I might get defensive, but you can't just tell people that. You have to give people more specifics, the vast majority of managers. And again, in my opinion, that just shows that this is about protecting the direct, that we want to validate. In fact, some of them say you need to validate what your direct was thinking. Actually, no, you don't. The organization doesn't want the direct's thinking validated if, in fact, the direct's thinking led to a bad outcome. It doesn't. Another thing they said, engage in a productive discussion. Now, this is an entire article about the idea of giving feedback, and the core of the article boiled down to those five words, engage in a productive discussion. No guidance about how.
No. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, and they're absolutely focusing on the what and not the how. And I will tell you, it bothers me immensely when I read this, because managers that read it get excited about it, like, yeah, that sounds good. But then they literally get there and realize they don't know what to do. And if you don't have the how, it's really not much help with us, for help for those of us who don't know what to do, how to proceed. Now, look, why is the heart of the dialogue model misguided? Because, again, your dialogue will ultimately get down to discussing your direct's intent. And, again, I realize this is going to sound harsh in today's world. I'm going to say it again. Your direct's intent isn't relevant to the organization's needs. Now, I'm going to illustrate this with a couple of examples, okay? And the first one, I don't think people like, but I love it, so... You know, get your own podcast. For some reason, people don't get this, but I'll tell you what, when I talk to economists, they get it. You have to consider for a moment that a company has legal personhood to understand this, but let's consider this. Suppose your company produced a product that didn't sell well. That lack of sales success, guys, you should know, is product feedback from the marketplace. Your company is an organization. It engages in behaviors in its marketplace, its ecosystem, and the marketplace gives it feedback, just like single-cell organisms, just like human beings, okay? If you walk around naked in public, you're going to get feedback about that, okay? If you become wealthy and then become a philanthropist, people are going to say thank you to you. That's a form of feedback, okay? If intent mattered, you put out a product hoping it'll sell. You've got all this research. You've got the good product. It's good quality and so on. And people don't buy it. If intent mattered, then why don't we see CEOs going on TV all the time and asking people to buy the product anyway because your firm meant well or had good intentions? They know they can't do that. And you know it too, because intentions on products don't matter. Results do. Sales do. Now, it may break your heart that it doesn't sell well, but you should spend 5 minutes letting your heart be broken and then go back and say, what did we miss? What did we get wrong? It could be the price, could be the quality, could be the market, could be there's a better product, or could be there's a barrier to entry for you. Who knows?
Yeah.
All right. So that's
I do it too. Like I make mistakes. As a matter of fact, I covered a mistake I did on ops on the finances yesterday, right? Oh, that's wrong. I messed that up. Now, did I intend to? I don't think so.
No, nobody. Well, look, that you bring up the next point. Here's another example, a microcosm. Ask yourself right now, dear listener, dear community member, who we are doing this all for and have been for 15 plus years, and we'll do it as long as we're allowed to. Have you made a mistake in the last month? I wish I could see you. I would say if we were doing a gigantic Zoom call with 500,000 people, I'd say, raise your hand. And we'd bet you have. You should have. If you're a manager, a director, an executive, you should be on the leading edge of things. Things should get fuzzy every once in a while. Now, ask yourself, just like Mike did you intend to make any of them? Of course you didn't. You had good intentions, good rationale, good emotions, good backing. You did what you thought was reasonable and appropriate, the way all ethical humans do. And yet things didn't go well.
Yeah.
Turned out poorly.
And dude, if you were then to call me after the ops call and say, what, and start getting to my head as to what I intended, like whether I intended, yeah. Like I actually might hit you and I'm a black belt. So I know how to do that.
Yeah, exactly. Luckily, he's very far away from me. I might be a little bit faster than you too, dude. Even though it's 62 guys.
Oh, and you're, 260 big, yeah, and you're bigger than me. Right. Yeah. If you hit me, question is, can I avoid you? Can I avoid
you? Could.
If I can avoid you, I probably could, win. If not,
yeah.
Probably
be a problem. If I get you on the ground, you're mine.
Yeah, I'm done. Yeah,
okay. Okay. So do you expect forgiveness? Does your boss send you a note and say, don't worry about that mistake, you meant well? Because you intended good things, should your boss say it doesn't matter that you had a bad outcome? If you make a lot of these mistakes, all with good intent, and your results suffer significantly, will you get a raise because you meant well? And the answer, as we all know, is of course you won't, because results matter, not intentions, not reasons, not motivations, not emotions, not ideas. Results matter. Now, look, you might say at this point, hey guys, I see this differently. When I do a dialogue, I'm not trying to give them a chance to justify their thinking. I get that their outcome was wrong, even if they meant well. And by the way, this is almost verbatim from a conversation I just had, which is the final straw that caused me to say, okay, I got to write a podcast about this. They say, what I'm trying to do is learn about their thinking so I can see, as we mentioned before, where upstream they might have gone wrong. That way they can self-diagnose when they're going wrong and do it better next time.
That's nice thinking.
Yeah, you know, I applaud it, but unfortunately, it's still misguided.
Oh.
Okay. It's not popular right now to say that that approach is misguided, but the fact is good intentions don't win the day, and your intentions, Mr. or Ms. Manager, to do that, to help them self-diagnose in the future, are misleading. They make you feel good, but they're not the purview of the manager. You know, the old saying, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. And we'll talk more about this in one of our next points. But the fundamental problem with the approach is your org. Now, listen carefully to this, guys. This is another thing that most people don't know. If you're a listener of ours for a long time, you've heard it enough. But the vast majority of people in the world are not listeners of ours. And so we have to consider that. Your organization doesn't want you solving your direct's problems.
What?
What? And I got to tell you, in Silicon Valley, no, I'm supposed to solve their problems. No, you're not. We know you probably think of yourself as a problem solver, and there's nothing wrong with that, guys. But from your organization's perspective, problems are most economically solved at the level at which they are created. You are a more expensive resource than your direct. It's managerial economics 101. It's true for any work that's not yet a problem, and it is true for every problem. Now, I'm not saying there are no problems that your directs create that you should solve. There are some you should. But your bias should be towards solving only the biggest and thorniest and letting them solve all the rest of their problems themselves. If you have a dialogue with them whenever they make a mistake, by the way, there are some people who mistakenly believe I'm only going to have dialogue on big things. Well, of course, then that begs the question, what are you doing on the small things that probably end up aggregating to form the big things? You should be giving more feedback, not waiting to give less feedback and then attacking the feedback and the person with a dialogue or a discussion too late when there's already a pattern. But look, if you have a dialogue, if you think every time they're made a mistake, you're inevitably pulled into a discussion of what they did and why, and you'll be spending too much time and therefore too much organizational money solving problems they need to learn to solve themselves. Now, okay, before you get all blustery, I think that's my job. We're not telling you to feed your directs to the wolves. It's okay to coach them. It's okay to suggest, to encourage, to recommend things for your direct to think about or to do. But if you do this every time you give negative feedback, you will be solving too many of their problems and spending too much of your time doing it.
Or, because it takes so much time, you won't give enough feedback.
Right? Exactly.
That's the other point of it.
Look, again, the point we made earlier, right? If the less feedback, the longer your feedback takes, freaking linear model. I've got a graph somewhere. The more longer your feedback takes, the less feedback you give, the less feedback you give, the less your performance grows. Now, the way to address your desire to help, and I get that desire, guys, and I never want you to lose it. What will we put on earth to do if not to help one another through? Okay. But organizations have some special rules and we need to learn about them. And most of us don't. And our companies don't teach us. And that's okay. But that's why we're here. You have to decouple your responsibility to give feedback and frequent feedback from your desire to help teach and train. And so what we recommend is you give feedback frequently. By the way, the vast majority of it should be positive, since the vast majority of your things your people do are positive. Being on time, showing up on time, all their deliverables on time, showing up to meetings on time, contributing to meetings, giving good presentations, slides that were that out errors, presentations that stay within the length of time, emails that are succinct but complete. God, that's what I live for. Mm-hmm. Complete and succinct, right? Just beautiful. In fact, that's what I think of is one small way that email can be beautiful. An email that is succinct, as short as it can possibly be,
but and no it covers shorter.
Everything. Yeah. And yes, but neither, no longer either.
Right.
So what you do is you give feedback first. Then after you're done with your responsibility to give feedback about it, the way the society gives you feedback about your products virtually instantly when you release them, then you can say, okay, you know, if you want to ask questions or come back for help, you can. Now, if I give Mike feedback, if Mike works for me and I say, hey, can I give you some feedback? Can I share something with you?
Sure, dude.
I had a very senior person the other day tell me, I can't use the word feedback. It's just too tinged with negativity. I said, well, okay, that's fine. You don't have to use that word. There's other ways we could do it. Interestingly enough, I said, I would tell you though, Mr. Executive, it doesn't bother me at all. And I'm the one getting the feedback. In fact, when you say feedback to me, it makes it very clear what we're doing. And wouldn't you want to have a dialogue or discussion or an engagement or a conversation or a short exchange with me about my performance in a way that made sense to me?
Yeah, but I don't want to be that direct. I want to sneak up on the person and give them feedback and not have them realize what I was doing until they walk away and go, oh, wait a minute.
Yeah, that's good. You're clever. Little. Yeah. I think there's a horseman's law that says you're not that smart and they're not that dumb.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, maybe there isn't. I'll have to go check the box. I think I have one box left of the original printed sets of horseman's laws. But look, here's what happens. I give Mike the feedback. Hey, can I give you some feedback? He says, yes. I said, when you did that thing, it wasn't so great. Can you do that better? It's great. Now, and he knows I want to have a 5-second conversation. He knows I trust him. I don't need to analyze, examine, what's the word when you frogs in high school, dissect. I don't need to get inside his brain, inside of his heart, inside of his intent, rationale, reasons, emotions, persuasions, whatever. I just want the behavior to change. And frankly, if his intents and motivations and emotions don't change, but the behavior changes, I'm happy. And that doesn't make me a bad manager. It actually makes me a good manager. But I want him to solve it himself. Okay. Now, if he does it again, I'll give him the same feedback in the same tone. Hey, same thing happening. Hey, can I give you some feedback? Yeah. When you did that, it's not helpful. Can you do that better next time? I'm not ratcheting up, by the way, guys. We cover all this in something called systemic feedback, one of my all-time favorite
categories. Yeah, you wait to ratchet up until the third time, right?
Yeah, no. The seventh time. And you don't ratchet up ever. You don't, if you want to give feedback and you want to do it in a way that's sustainable for the rest of your career, you always give feedback in a positive tone of voice because feedback is about at a more effective future.
Yeah.
Or put differently, effective future behavior. If that's negative feedback, it means change your behavior. That's all. Doesn't mean change who you are. I don't ever want you to change who you are. If your role changes, your behavior will need to change. That's like wearing a coat in the wintertime, for heaven's sakes. If I give you positive feedback, I want more of the same in the future. So I give him that feedback the second time, and he still's got it wrong. And I see a funny look on his face. He says, yeah, boss, good, thanks, got it. I see a funny look on his face. I say, you need some help? And he's like, yeah, I'm not really sure I know what I'm doing. I said, okay, look, we can talk now. I've got 5 minutes. Maybe we'll work it out. Or let's say I only have 1 minute. I'll say, I got a meeting in 1 minute. But look, next one-on-one, or stop by. It looks like my calendar's free from 3:30 to 4. Just show up at my office, and we'll talk it through.
Right. But that conversation is separate and distinct from the feedback, right?
Yes. And if you think you're going to have a half-hour conversation every time you need to give feedback, you're not going to give much feedback. And your people aren't going to learn as fast. Now, I'll go a step further. The conversation that I'm going to have with them is not about what they were thinking or feeling or intending.
Mm-hmm.
The conversation is going to be about behavior, about the future behavior. And I'm not going to try to dissect them like a frog. And guys, even this simple decoupling of your responsibility to give feedback, performance communications, which you're obligated to do, and it doesn't mean just giving them an annual review, and your desire to help, to teach, and so on, which are legitimate, and I honor you for them, decoupling will save you a great deal of time. It'll also help your directs by making them responsible for their own development. You know, I've said it before, the Montessori school slogan I've always loved, the parent who continues to tie the shoes of the child who can do it themselves is just in the way. But that won't happen if you see all negative feedback scenarios and situations as a chance to dialogue with them.
Yeah.
It's not your job.
Yeah. That was good, dude. I love these conversations.
I can't believe we went 40 minutes. But I got into a lot of theory there. I'm sorry.
No, it's good. I think as managers, we have to understand why we do the things we do. And it can't be simply, well, that's just the way I do it. Like,
yeah,
we ought to think intellectually about what we're doing. And
yeah.
What are we doing? Are we getting the results that we intend?
Yes.
And if we don't
I had a conversation last week, Mike, with a guy. He said, well, I don't like that. And I said, well, that's funny.
Okay.
He says, what do you mean? I said, because the organization doesn't care what you like. Well, I think I'll be better doing something that I like. I said, okay, let me unpack that for you, dude. You're doing in a way that you and I both know is ineffective. I know this way is better, but you're willing to say, I don't like it. You then have an obligation to go searching for another method. And you're always telling me you don't have time.
Or search for another job.
Yeah,
well, where you get to do what you want to do.
Yeah, I couldn't have convinced this guy of that.
Yeah.
And so he basically says, yeah, I don't like that. I'm not going to do that. I said, well, you should have one of your team then going out and searching for different models, because you and I both know, you've said it yourself, your model for doing the thing we're talking about here isn't working. And I said, in fact, one of the things about being a professional is being willing to try things you don't like that you believe will make the organization and you more effective. And then when you realize they do make you more effective, you'll very quickly grow to like them. Mm-hmm. You don't get paid. And I said to him, I said, you don't get paid to do what you like. In fact, the CEO job, which this guy, he probably aspired to and had all the intellectual horsepower and interpersonal skills and big picture vision to do it, said, that's not how I see things. I said, oh, okay. I think he would have described the conversation as Mark and I were describing our different viewpoints. And I was like, I don't actually have a viewpoint.
Yeah.
I'm telling you what the scientific laws are that rule organizations. This isn't a viewpoint.
Yeah. So it's the law of physics. I mean, you can jump off a building and flap your wings as much as you want. You're going to fall, right?
Yeah. Yep. Exactly. Yeah.
All right, dude.
More to come next week.
We got more. Yeah, one more part, folks. We got one more, apparently. So, cool. All right, my friend. I enjoyed that quite a bit.
A lot of fun.
Folks, we'll see you next week. Have a great one.
Thanks, partner.
Bye-bye.